Well, I'm super excited to have my good friend Ian on the Passion Beyond the Art show. Everybody knows him as a logo geek. And Ian, welcome.
Hey, it's good to be on here. And it's good to see your face again. It's been too long.
And for just to give you a little bit behind the scenes, we have been trying to get this done for like... I think we're at months now, probably at least a month and a half.
I'm actually thankful that this is slightly delayed because I know when we originally booked this in, I was in the midst of Kickstarter stuff. And today, I sent out the last two copies of the book and the Kickstarter campaign, with the exception of a couple of extra bits and pieces that I need to do still, is 100% shipped. So it's perfect timing to have a conversation and dive into some of the stuff that I haven't publicly spoken about yet.
Sweet. All right. So you guys have kind of gotten a little bit of a hint. So this interview is mostly about Ian's new book.
Whatever you want to talk about. I'm an open book myself, so.
All right, so first let's kind of do a quick dive in on like what Ian has been up to and since the last time we talked.
Yeah, it's been a while, and I know that a lot has happened since we last did a podcast together. So do you want me to jump straight into it?
Yeah, go ahead. Let's do it.
Sure. So As Daryl mentioned, most people know me for everything that I've been doing around logo design. And Logo Geek is something that I started building on the side of a full-time job. And I believe the last time that we did an interview together, I was pretty much doing it as a side venture then, on the side of a fairly demanding director role. When I used to work at this like a web design e-commerce agency, and a lot's happened since then, like I said. So here today, I now work for myself full time. I've gone all in on my logo design venture. So it's split down the middle in two ways. So basically, I work with clients most of the time, and that's where the bulk of my income comes from. And that is primarily logo design. I do other things as well for clients. So usually we might start with a logo and then we might work on other bits and pieces to extend the identity. But that's one side of my business. And then the other side, it is, again, something that kind of started off as a hobby where I've been building resources and community and so on for anyone that's interested in logo design. And this is the one area that I feel has progressed a lot since we last spoke. I believe I had the Logo Geek podcast at the time when we spoke, but that was one of the first avenues that I took with my business, and now that's at about 150 episodes. And probably about 2 years ago, I started properly working on the idea of a book, and it's something I've wanted to do basically throughout my journey of since working on logo design. I've wanted to write a book in some capacity on the topic, and here right now I've actually finished that book. It's now been released, it's now out there publicly for people to access, and it's called Make a Living Designer Logos. And it's been a bit of a passion project. I mean, this is something that I've personally really wanted to do for most of my adult life. Definitely, at least for the last 10 years, I've wanted to work on a book. So it's good to see that that's finally out there. But one of the most important things for me is that it's kind of central to what I'm going to be doing ongoing with Logo Geek, because I've had questions to myself as what is Logo Geek and what's the purpose of it, and now I know what that is, and it is basically to my mission with everything that I'm doing is to help people to make a living designing logos in the way that I have done. So with the book, I share my personal journey, my approach, how I've basically gone from having an interest in logo design and it being a hobby, and then transitioning from it being a hobby into it becoming a full-time venture. And then my podcast will contribute to that and add to that and enhance all of that by sharing other people's experiences. And the great thing with going down the avenue of making a living doing this is it doesn't always have to be logo design episodes. I can go into marketing things. I can go into, I can go into lots of different avenues that interest me personally, that can help me improve personally. But I know that that will help a lot of people as well. Because if you're interested in logo design, you're likely also interested in business, in marketing, in other areas. And if you want to do this as a full-time expert, that this job doesn't exist. You can't, or it's very rare to get a job where you are a logo designer. That job doesn't exist. The only way to get that job is to create it yourself. And that's my mission, to help people to also do this that are interested in pursuing the avenue.
That's right. That's right. And for anyone who is saying, oh, Ian, it does exist, it actually doesn't. If you're going to work at an agency, you're going to do more than just logos, right? The only way you can just be specializing in just logos is if you decide to go on your own. Because every single agency, you have to do everything.
You have to do everything. Yeah, like when I worked full time as a graphic designer, I did absolutely every design thing, from print, from exhibition stands, to web design, to pretty much everything. But now I am designing logos primarily. Like it's the bulk of my work. I'm working on them daily. It's not as simple as that's what you do all day, every day. You obviously need to build a business and the stuff that is attached to that. But if it's the main thing that you are really passionate about, then, you know, these other bits and pieces contribute to the contribute to attracting clients and building a reputation around it. So yeah.
That's awesome. So, hey, Ian, remind us how long between starting Logo Geek to now going full-time, how long did it take you to go full-time?
Okay, I probably could have went full-time a long time ago, but I'll go through some of the sort of high-level steps that I took. So I would say it's probably been a 10-year journey. As I mentioned, when I first started, I worked full time for a company. I was lucky that in that particular position, I was doing graphic design, I was working on logos, I was doing things I wanted to do. But in terms of starting Logo Geek, that originally started as a hobby, and it was actually just over 10 years ago. So releasing this book is almost like a celebration of the last 10 years, which is quite a nice thing to do. But, you know, starting out initially, it was a very slow process over the space of 10 years. And, you know, I literally started off doing a few things for friends and family, to gradually doing things for like acquaintances, so old work colleagues or friends from school that I hadn't spoke to for years, and then gradually working for, you know, people finding me that I didn't know that needed logos. And then, you know, gradually over the years, once I saw the potential of what I could do with this, I started focusing on things more, started focusing on my website, on the content, social media marketing, a lot of that stuff. I eventually got to a point where I had a fair amount of inquiries coming in. I think what really held me up, because it did take probably about 8 years to go from starting this thing on the side to actually doing it full time. It took that length of time, but it could have been less. The main thing that really held up was my mindset, my, you know, what's in my head. Because it's I grew up with the understanding that you basically you go to school, you go to college if you wanted to do that, and then you get a job and you work 9 to 5 or whatever, and this is the way that things work. And my initial plan when I was younger was to, you know, kind of work up the ladder, you know, and you know, my one of my eventual aims was to, you know, get a job at maybe like a London design agency or something like that and work for a company. And there was never this plan of working for myself, going freelance, getting my own clients. That wasn't ever an option for me or something that I was interested in pursuing. It was more that I was forced isn't the right word, but pushed down the avenue because of the success of what I ended up building. Because I had my full-time job. I enjoyed that job. I like working in teams. And then on the side of that, everything was also growing. I was having emails coming in, lots of work coming in, and it becomes a lot to take on when you have a full-time job and then you come home and you have to carry on working. Like, even if I didn't take on any projects, I had to work on it in some way because I had emails coming in or whatever. And really what pushed it was actually this constant niggle of, I need to give up one of these. And not knowing what to do. And I kept deciding I'm going to stick to my full-time job, but then I didn't want to kill my business. I didn't want to kill my baby because it's like, I put so much time and effort into this that I don't want to just like take the website down. Right. So it literally took something drastic happening. Like my mum passed away and I started to think about living with regrets and getting old and having regrets, that I started to think to myself, what if I was to not pursue this avenue? Would I regret that? Hell yeah, I would regret that.
Right.
Especially when opportunities were coming up, my website's ranking well on Google, you know, all these things, there are all these success factors, and it's like, wouldn't it be great to know what would happen if I did take that risk and I did take that leap and I did go down the avenue? So once I decided that, I eventually handed in my notice. They offered me part time. And then fast forward a few years, my daughter was born. And that was the final push, really. You know, when you're at work and your partner is sending messages, videos, and you're missing out, and you have this feeling that you're missing out on your child growing up. That for me, that was the final push. I wanted to be at home and to see that and to be able to be in a position where I wouldn't miss out. And I did some numbers. I worked out how much I would need to make in order to cover my then part-time job. And I regretted not working out sooner, because when you think of an annual salary, you only know the annual figure. It's when you calculate it by how much you would need to make in a day, then you realize, I literally was thinking, I only need, I think it was like 2 or 3 more projects in a month to replace my entire salary. That was taking up 3 days a week. And I like, what, like, it really annoyed me that I didn't sit down and work that out earlier, because based on the amount of leads that was coming in, that was not only possible, but that was comfortably doable. And that was comfortably doable for several years prior. So I eventually took the jump, and I've been, you know, continuing ever since. And I mean, it's not easy working for yourself. I think taking this avenue is it's a challenging pursuit, and you are literally kind of working all the time in some shape or form.
Always.
It really feels like, you know, work life and personal life is very much a hybrid. They are mashed together. but I'm enjoying it. It's great. You know, it's really exciting because the stuff that I have done over the last few years that I know would have been impossible if I stayed working for a company. Like things like, you know, I'll just show you things I wouldn't have been able to have done this if I didn't take the leap. And obviously it's taking that leap is all part of the story. Like that literally that's the almost like the story of the book or the journey of the book. But yeah, now when I'm old, I won't have any regrets because at least I've taken that leap and gone down that journey. But yes, to answer your question, it wasn't an overnight thing. This has been a long, gradual journey that's taken just under 10 years.
But you see, the thing is, one of the things that I'm glad you said was like, due to the crumbs of success, you were somewhat, for lack of a better word, forced to choose one.
Yes, I would say forced to choose one is the right word.
Because I think also one thing I'm also cautioned of is like we are also in this era of like quit your day job era. We're also in this era of quit your day job. And I do think there are times where some of us are making the wrong decision. But I feel like you saw evidence to make a decision. I think some of us are just kind of like just up and like, oh, I just need to quit.
I feel that that's irresponsible. And I think something about my character is I always need to know that there is a safe option. Like even when I did eventually take that leap, I knew that if I really needed to, I could probably have got my old job back. I could probably have went back and said, you know, I'm really sorry, this hasn't worked out for me. Can I have my job back? And that probably would have been a backup plan for me to take. But thankfully, I saw the evidence that if I did step away, that I would be able to make the same amount of money. Mm-hmm. I had the leads coming in already. I had the reputation already. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it felt like a very safe, stable option to take. And I still feel that way now. Like, I still feel that even though, like I said, it's not an easy thing to do, ranking on page one of Google for generic terms like logo design, I'm pretty safe. As long as that stays there, I'm safe. And even if that did go, I know based on everything that I've learned over the last 10, 20 years or so, that I know exactly what I would need to do to get more clients, to get more work, to make money come in. And I'm confident in myself and I know I can make that happen.
And then on top of it too, one of the things that I've noticed that you've done, you've built a community that if you combined all the avenues together, it's over six figures as far as the size of the community. Mm-hmm. And you haven't really monetized it. You haven't really monetized it.
I haven't. And I put a lot of thoughts on that.
But I'm just saying though, like, you've put so much time into building the community that whenever that time comes, you've poured so much into the community. You've given so much to the community. You've asked so little of the community that if and when that time comes, people will more than happy. They'll be like, it's about time you monetize us. You've basically created a community that's probably saying it's about time you monetize us. You know what I mean? Just by the sheer numbers, it's a possibility. And I think that's one thing that also people should look at. Like, you spent time building something that you've given to, not so much. You've asked a lot. If you do the percentage, you've probably asked, I'll say maybe 5% of the time. And the biggest ask is probably this book. Outside of that, you haven't really asked.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And it's been one of those interesting things. So I used to go to events. and there's this business, there's a business event called Upreneur Summit that I used to go to a lot, and people there, they are building personal businesses around them, so building personal brands. And most people there are the opposite of me, where they have a product, a course, a thing, and they are looking for people to buy this thing. I'm the other way around, where I have the people and the community, but I don't have a thing for them to purchase. And right. I have been aware of that, and I have thought about that a lot. And it's part of the reason why I've felt like I really needed to push this book, so that I do have at least something at the bottom of the funnel that people can have, people can purchase, people can, you know, use. But there's also this side, like when you started telling me about monetizing my audience, it feels really slimy, and like I've built this community, and I greatly respect everybody within that community, and I don't want to just like juice everybody in there, because it just feels, it doesn't feel right to me to, you know, to juice the community in that way.
Right.
And obviously I am aware that there are opportunities there for that, and everything that I'm doing with my book gives the opportunity for that. But anything I do, I really want to do it in a very respectful way, and make sure that there's as much freely available as possible. Like I would like to think that my podcast will always be free. I like to think that access to a community is always free. I'd like to think that there's always this free side of it. But as I've seen following people like Pat Flynn, and I believe you know him as well, following his story, he had the same mindset as me, where there's all this stuff for free. Why would anyone pay for it? But actually, you can take knowledge and package it up and put it out there. So if people don't have the time or energy to go through hundreds of hours of content, you can create, you know, more concise, more comprehensive versions of that. And that's obviously something that I would really like to do. It's something that interests me. I'm aware it will help people, and I think everything that I've been doing, you know, more recently, in particular with my book, and having, you know, more of a bigger vision for everything, I think that will start to happen now. I would say that my book's been the greatest bottleneck. That's undeniably probably the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. Not writing a book, but actually finishing it. It's a very, very hard thing to write a book. It's a horrible process. But yeah, now it's done. Now that's done. That's available for people. And it would only make sense to build stuff off the back of that. It's something that I'm interested in personally in doing. And yeah, if it makes money, then it's a good thing. But that's not why I've done it.
I think Ian, part of the thing, there's a few things that you've said that I hope, like, whoever's listening or watching, pay attention. It's like the level of care that you have for the community, the respect that you have for the community, and even when you do sell something like a book, it's to help the community. And I think these are some of the things that people should pay attention to. Like, you're thinking about, how can I bring value to as much value, like no-brainer value, to the community, to where people are like, how generous of you. And I think that's something that we all should think about in terms of, like, whatever industry we are part of, how are we serving it? Mm-hmm. How are we giving to that industry? And, you know, I mean, I appreciate you for that, because I know, like, you've poured a lot and you've given a lot, and it's not the norm. But when you spend this much time, these are the things that last. Like, when you spend this much time and this much care and this much respect just by the people that I'm around, these are the things that last.
Yeah, and like I said, I'm very conscious of that It's almost like that Spider-Man saying, "We're great crap, butchered it. With great power comes great responsibility." And I am aware that I am in this unique position where I've built a podcast that is of significance that I can basically open doors. So, you know, there's been a couple of things that I've been experimenting with over the past year that I really need to leverage more and really push, because I tested it and it worked. I can go up to pretty much any design agency in the world and say, "Can I sit down with your most important people and have a conversation for an hour, record it, and then invite you in to a community and have a chat with everybody?" I don't know many other people that is in the position that can do that. It feels weird saying that because I'm not generally the type of person that likes being the center of attention, but I am aware that I have that clout and that power and that capability of doing that. So I'm probably one of very few people that has the capability of basically creating the best collective group of logo designers. And like I said, you know, if you go to like a football match or a, you know, baseball match or something, or a concert, the moment that you walk in, you are basically to them just ka-ching money. They want money out of you for drinks, money out of you for food, money out of you for where you're sitting, access to all these different things. They're literally milking you. And I feel like that with things like Comic-Con. And it's a horrible feeling where you are basically, where you feel like you're being milked the moment that you walked into the moment you walk into that building. And I don't want anyone to feel like that I've created this community purely to profit from it, because like for me, there's what I built is built off the back of a hobby, and I've got this somewhere out there goal for everything. And the interesting thing with it is that somewhere out there goal doesn't include money. Like, the obviously you need enough money to be able to run that thing, because I've got this big vision of building, like, you know, having this big annual celebration for logo design and having smaller events. I've got this big picture planned for everything. But yeah, that big picture doesn't include money. So for me, it's more exciting to be able to actually do these things than to profit from them. So like finishing this book, actually writing this book, that's just a personal dream and goal. And you know, I did a Kickstarter campaign for that, and it's like, in terms of funding, it made around £10,000 worth of funding. All of that money went into that campaign. Like, I literally didn't really make any money off the back of that at all. But it did open up a lot of doors, and it was very exciting to do, and it's really nice to see. Or really, like, it's hard to describe. It's really surreal to have a dream of doing something and then to see it actually real. And it's the same with everything with the community. And, you know, for me, it's not about, you know, creating this community of people that want access to me. It's creating a community of people that just want to be part of a community. Because everybody has the same weight of voice as I do. Like, I'm aware that I'm not the best logo designer in the world, and I'm aware that I can learn from people in the community just as much as they can learn from me. And yeah, everything I'm doing is just more around you know, actually building a true community where people get to know each other, and that support network is there. And I still got a long way to go, but I'm working on it. If it makes money, then so be it. But that's not the goal. Like, literally, money's nice, but I don't long for like expensive cars. I'm happy with what I have. I don't need a bigger house. When you have a bigger house, there's more rooms to clean. There's more rooms for children to make messy. I don't long for possessions, really. You know, things that do come to mind. They're not expensive, you know? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm.
It's funny you say that. It's funny you say that. Like, when me and my wife were looking for, like we were talking about, like, getting another house. Like, we were actually, and our family size hasn't changed, and our kids are only getting older. We were actually looking for a smaller mm-hmm. size of house. We were going the opposite, because usually people are going, getting a bigger house. We were actually looking for a smaller size house. Mm-hmm. Maybe more yard space, but the actual house itself, the footprint of the house. So I totally agree with you. Like, we were actually going the opposite. It was like, maybe we could use less bedrooms mm-hmm. and less mm-hmm. less. Omit a dining room and all of that stuff. Like, so I totally agree with
yeah,
you.
I don't know if it's an age thing, but I'm at the point where, you know, I want less than I have now. Like, I've got so many things, so many books, so much stuff. And, you know, I've cleared out a lot of stuff because I moved a few times over the past couple of years. And when you lug a box of books enough times, you're like, I want to get rid of these. It's really interesting because, like, in my kitchen here, I have a whole shelf of books and bits and pieces, and I haven't touched any of it in like a year. Like, do I need it? And yeah, I probably don't.
I'm there with you. I don't think it's an age thing. I think it's a mindset thing, because I think there's much more people going for bigger and more than there is that's going the opposite direction. I do believe that. I don't think the whole entire, like, majority of the world is trying to downsize. Majority of the world is trying to get bigger.
Yeah, yeah. I think you are right. That is probably a mindset thing. And I think where it's come from in my case is my daughter, that mm-hmm. I value the time with her greater mm-hmm. than the things I have, if that makes sense. And I think, you know, becoming a dad has shifted my perception of stuff and things. And like, I think it'd be better to spend money on having a nice day out with her than buying a book or a computer game or something. So it's probably a mixture 100%. Of, it's probably a mixture of a number of things, but yeah, I just mean in general, you know, in theory, I've got a community of tens of thousands in theory, and you know, if I was get just £1 from each of them, that's a lot of money. But what do you do? I don't know what people do with so much money. And I know I've had conversations with different people, like people have told me that you can choose what you're going to do with it, and you could give it to certain things and make certain things happen, which is true. And something I have been thinking a lot over the past year is that actually, if I did monetize my community, I could provide more value to the community at the same time. Right. So
use that money to bring more value to the community.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's a very valid point, and something that I clearly need to work on, because I know I can provide support and help and so on to a lot of people. And I've demonstrated that to myself and others by writing a book that's getting very good feedback. So yeah, we'll see. I mean, I let my business grow organically. Like, where it is now was never really a plan. Like, I had a rough vision for how it looked, but it's always adapting and growing. And I've got ideas for, you know, even creating things for kids, you know, creating design resources for children. I've got loads of ideas, and we'll see where it takes us. But yes, if the community was bringing in money, then I could spend more time on that stuff. So
yeah, makes sense. All right, so let's talk a little bit about the book. I guess we already know why you wrote the book. How did you decide? This is my most fascinating thing, because it's selfishly, because one day I want to turn Passion Beyond Art into a book.
Do it.
How did you determine the chapters?
Okay, so I learned a really useful method from Pat Flynn. So interestingly, it was about 10 years ago that Pat Flynn started his YouTube channel, and his very first video was when he was releasing his first book, and he's since released a few since then. And he had this exercise using post-it notes, where basically you take a post-it note, you write down a topic that you know that you want in your book, you put it down, you write, take another one, and you basically keep doing this until you have all of these ideas for what you know will be in the book. And then you can start grouping them into bundles. And those bundles basically become your chapters. And sweet. once you've taken all these post-it notes, you can then start to have a high level plan for your book. And then what you can do is you can basically take a post-it note and then write something. And it's a really, really good way of getting everything out of your head, planning high level, and seeing where you want to take this book.
That makes sense. That's interesting. I'll definitely kind of look into that. So what would you say was the hardest part of doing a book?
So I wanted to write a book for a long time. Like, it's probably been a 10-year journey that I've really, really wanted to write a book. And originally, I did this post-it note thing, and I did that a long time ago. And I thought to myself, I am going to take a post-it note and write a blog post. And then eventually, when I wrote enough blogs, I put them all together into a book. And this is what I thought would work. But a year would go by, and I'd only wrote like 4 or 5 blogs. And that was doing them for what felt frequently, because when you're running your business, marketing, content marketing, writing, none of that makes a penny. Yes, you can get sponsors and stuff for it, but in general, it doesn't make any money. Therefore, you focus on your client work, and that stuff is always like secondary. You know that you need to do it, but it's not like the most important thing. So, like I said, a year would go by, and I wrote only 4 blogs. And I heard somewhere that a relatively small book, like a normal size book, is about 50,000 words. And that's a lot of words. So in order to write that many words, you have to write 1,000 words a week for an entire year. And that just puts into perspective how much of a big thing this is, because it's not just a case of writing 1,000. There have to be 1,000 good words, and they have to kind of run in a flow, and it's just an enormous task. So in terms of getting things going, I realized if I was going to do it, I really had to focus on it. Like I really needed a routine, and I needed to sit down and really get on with it. So that was one of the hard things, kind of accepting the amount of work I was undertaking. But probably the harder thing came later on in the process. So the first draft of the book came together quite quickly once I actually decided to sit down and just write. So when I say a first draft, it's just like a brain dump, just writing everything that I want to write and pulling it all together. And then like a second draft is going through that and just tidying it up. It was later on where there was a couple of missing chapters and sections that I wanted to write about. And I really, really struggled with them, like really to the point where I kind of felt like I didn't want to do it anymore. Like they were painfully horrible to write. One of them was the resources section for the back of the book. It was just bone dry, freaking boring to write. I really struggled with that. I really, really struggled with it. And even like proofreading it, just a horrible section to write, because there's lots of links, lots of resources. You want to make sure that everything's in there. you want to make sure that you thought of everything. Yeah, so that was one area that I really struggled with. And then another was, within the book, I have this, like, the first part is my logo design process, and then the later part of the book is building a business around that. And there was a section in the book where I decided that I wanted to add example projects, and I would take a project and go in detail exactly how I took project goals and translated that into a solution. And I found it so hard to write. And it's not because obviously the solution, like the final thing, solved the goals and the project, but explicitly describing in detail how I took this thing and translated that into visuals, I like writing it, I just wanted to cry, because it's like, I don't know how to do this. And I really struggled with that section. And I actually ended up not feeling like working on the book for a while. I had some personal things going on as well. So there was a 2-year long period where I actually didn't work on the book. And it was when I got back to the book and sat down and started reading it that I realized I don't need that whole section in there. I can integrate everything into throughout the book in a different way. So I can still explain my process, and I can still explain my thought process and so on. But it didn't have to be specifically for one project, and it didn't have to be so closed in. I could talk through how I think about projects and how I solve a problem and how I come up with ideas based on project goals. But it didn't have to be the way that I was originally planning to do it. So once I got over that hurdle, then everything just started to come together. But yeah, there was points where writing a book is a real journey, and you really have to dedicate a lot of time to it, and you put a lot of your own personal self into it. Like, it's a very personal experience, and it's obviously hard to sit down and write, but there's times when it feels good and it's exciting and it flows, and then there are times when it's just horrible. Like, I can't even describe. It's like, it's painfully horrible, and you just need to persevere and keep pushing and keep pushing and pushing, keep going until you get there. And I guess it's like childbirth, really, where there's the, you know, good bit, and then there's the horrible bits at the end where you just need to keep pushing it out. But I'm a man, so I don't need to do that, but you know what? Yeah, I mean,
I was thinking there's probably a few ladies that just roll their eyes just now.
But yeah, writing a book is like giving a birth to a child, where there's it's just not nice. But once it's done, that's, it's great. Awesome.
You know what? I love that, though, because it kind of gives a perspective. You know, a lot of times, as we all know, people see the end result. So people want to jump to where Ian is at now and not know what it's like to get to that.
You know what? Something that's really surprised me. I thought once I wrote the book, it would be easy. But no, it's still endless amounts of work to actually release the it's hard.
I've been a part of a team where we've launched 2 books, and there's a lot of work leading up to the book launch. But make no mistake, after the book launch, there is still a lot.
There's a lot of work. I still have loads of work to do, even though I finished it. Like, people are like, so I'm, and what's making a difference for me, I'm self-publishing. Or rather, self-published. Mm-hmm. I launched it initially through Kickstarter, and enough money came in to make me choose to become a publisher. So I am acting as an author and publisher. And global distribution is a lot more challenging than you would realize. Like the world is a big place, and in order to really distribute a book in the way that a publisher does, you really have to spend hundreds of thousands of pounds on stock. They need to be in different fulfillment centers in different parts of the world. It's incredibly complicated, and I had Well, I mean, I had a rough idea, but I didn't quite realize the scale of it. So what I'm doing now is I'm personally distributing the book in the UK currently. So like I said, I initially launched it through Kickstarter, and that allowed me to send it globally to different people that ordered the book. But actually, like, the ongoing sales, so far I got it in one bookshop, and that in itself was no small feat. Like, that, as an independent, generally bookshops don't deal with independents. Bookshops deal with distributors or publishers. They don't like to deal with individual people that have a book. Like, why would they keep hassling individual people when they can just go to one organization that has thousands of books? So you're really up against a monster, really. Like, there's a huge infrastructure in the world around books. So yeah, I'm doing it independently in the UK. So the version that I got printed with Kickstarter, I've still got I got more stock than I needed. So I've currently got it in one bookshop, which is is a shop called Magma in London. It's a graphic design shop in Covent Garden, one of my favorite shops. And that was kind of like the dream, really, is to write a book and see it in Magma. And I've done that, which is very exciting. I've since found out how to get into Waterstones, which is probably the biggest bookshop in the UK. That, in order to do that, you go through a company called Gardeners. And Gardeners work with independents. So you basically need to register with them. And then if Waterstones orders your book, they order it through Gardeners, and then Gardeners get it through you. So I've been learning a lot about that sort of stuff. Obviously, selling on Amazon, I've set up an account on Amazon Seller Central. So what you do is you send in your stock of books, and Amazon do the fulfillment for you. The biggest lesson I've learned with that is not to send too much stock. I basically sent them everything I had, and then started seeing each day the money going down. Like, I sold a book, and then basically all the money starts going, because you pay per day per item. And when you have, like, you know, so I've actually just sent most of it back. So just to the right of me, I've got loads of books. So that was one big mistake. But yeah, I'm selling it through Amazon. And then the rest of the world, I'm doing print on demand, because physically distributing the book globally in any other way, I just can't. I cannot physically, personally, meet the demand. There's lots of laws in different countries, VAT in some parts of the world. It's like I said, it's way more complicated than what I thought. So UK, I'm distributing it. Rest of the world, it's print on demand. And that is now all set up, so we'll see how it goes.
Man, that's awesome. I can't wait to get mine as we get ready.
It's on its way. It's on its way.
Yeah, I know. If it's delayed again, if it's delayed, it's because of me. But as we get ready to close, any parting words you want to leave with the audience in regards to writing a book, in regards to anything, whatever you decide, any words of wisdom?
Sure. So I think the bulk of this conversation has been wrapped up around book writing. So I think it makes sense to share some thoughts on that. So most designers that I know dream of writing a book. Very few of them have actually done it. And I think a lot of people think, one day I will do that. And I think I've always been in that camp where, you know, I've had this idea of doing it, and I'll make it like a New Year's resolution or something. But then in reality, it just doesn't happen. And I did that for several years. You can actually go back to podcasts where I say, I'm going to write my book this year, and it just doesn't happen by the end of the year. I think if you're going to do it, you really have to commit. You have to go all in. You have to write daily. You have to have a routine. And if you don't do that, it's never going to get done. Like, if you genuinely want to write a book, sit down and start it and dedicate time every single day. it's easy to feel like you don't have time. Like although I work for myself, my job's quite demanding in that I've always got clients that I need to deal with. There's always something on my list. There's always something that's a priority. And what I started doing was this routine where I basically put my daughter to bed, and then no matter how tired I felt, I would sit down on my computer and start typing. And I would set this rule where I had to write, I can't remember exactly how many words, but say like 200 words. Once I wrote 200 words, I could do whatever I wanted. And some days I'd write that and then I'm like, no, I don't want to do it anymore. But other days it's like really in the flow and I'd just sit there and type until like 1, 2 a.m. in the morning. But you really need, like if you really, really want to do it, you have to do it. You know, life is short. The years go by and, you know, as you get older, the years seem to be shorter. It doesn't feel that long ago that it was January and we're talking about Christmas now. You know, we're mid-November, which is just absolutely insane. So yeah, that would be my part in words, really, is to commit to it and actually make time for it and make it a routine.
That's awesome. I love it. So where can people go to learn, find out about you? Where can they go to find you?
Sure. So my website is logogeek.uk. If you search Logo Geek on Google or any social channel, you would be able to find me. If you're interested in my book, it's called Make a Living Design Logos, and you should be able to find it on Amazon pretty much everywhere globally, fingers crossed.
That's awesome, Ian. Thanks so much for the time. This has been awesome. Just so much good insight.
It's been really good to catch up. So thank you for inviting me on, and hopefully people listening have enjoyed it.